we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today is a little bit of a fun treat slash experiment. We were just all talking, laughing, really. We're laughing. And because we're not just co-workers, we're also family. We're family first before we even do any work. We were just catching up on all the family things happening. We had quite an interesting 24 hours because we have kids just like anyone else that probably listens. And they sometimes, kids specifically, they can give you some fun surprises and or maybe push back or, you know, maybe a variety of things within a 24-hour period.
And you can surprise yourself with how you respond to that pushback.
Yes. Yes, the ongoing tension. So we were telling Phil and Diane, you guys, this story, and they're like, we have to just start talking about it. So here's what we did. We didn't really structure too much of this at all. So this is going to be a real, honest, in real time conversation about conflict and repair, rupture and repair, and what you do in that space and how we're trying to live that out. And I say trying because it's not perfect or beautiful or easy. It's really tricky. And it, even though, you know, we know to do this work mentally, it's not like our emotions are always right there. So even though, like, I know that we're repairing, it still doesn't always just feel good.
Yeah.
It feels hard. You're like, but you still had the rupture part. You still had the breakdown of conversation or hurt feelings or whatever. So we want to talk about essentially conflict resolution, rupture, repair. I want to also start
between like parent and child.
Parent and child. Yeah. Primarily between parent and child. Thank you for the clarification. But I think also between, this will apply, I
yes.
think,
oh, yeah. absolutely.
For any human relationship. So I think you can take that. Sure. But interestingly enough, I was being interviewed on someone else's podcast about a month ago, and I was just sharing this in the circle. But he's a therapist as well as an author. And he had just said, you know, I never sit down with anybody in my office and have them say, my mom, my dad wounded me. It was the worst situation in the world. I have all this trauma. But then they sat down and they apologized on the regular and, you know, admitted their faults and were able to apologize. He's like, I never have anybody in my office like that. He's like, the repair is so powerful. You don't even understand how powerful it is. And I think as people are listening, you would even probably say, if my parents came to me right now and honestly took responsibility for some of the stuff that happened, it wouldn't erase it, it would heal some stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we want to talk about that because we've had a pretty heavy 24 hours. And we're not going to go into overwhelming detail because our kids are old enough. And, you know, obviously we don't want to, our kids are like your kids. They're normal. So they make decisions that we wouldn't always be like the most positive about. And at the very same time, I think we don't always handle that well. So thoughts on conflict in family. I know we were even talking, Phil and Diane, mm-hmm. you guys remember the stage with teenage kids. And we're going to talk about not only like how to repair with older kids, teenagers, but also your little kids too. Yeah. So, but yeah. you guys reflected.
And it, for me, because I didn't know, we didn't come from a Christian home. So I had memories of, especially those teenage years.
Yeah.
We came back from living overseas in an international school system, which was very different than the American schools, the way it's set up. The rules are all different. And my brother and I were teenagers.
Mm.
And we just went through all sorts of acting out as we were making adjustments. Of course, my parents didn't know that they kind of needed to help us. They were going through their own adjustments. My dad in a job that was a lot of responsibility. My mom coming back and trying to find friends. And there was a lot of upheaval in our home. And as you were talking, Brooke, about rupture and repair, I just thought, what a difference it would have made to my parents if somebody had told them about this.
Mm.
And our experience through those tumultuous years and our memories of them would have been completely different because I know my parents would have said, oh my gosh, this is great.
Yes.
Because they wanted to do well. They just were not equipped for it. So I'm the one who was pushing you guys to say, you have to do this episode because you know, most parents don't get this stuff. And also when we had teenagers and they started pushing back, especially in the teenage years, I think we did better in the younger years, but in the teenage years, we were so shocked by it. We didn't know. We weren't ready for it.
Yeah.
We didn't have a plan.
Yeah.
So we figured it out.
We did.
You know, I think as we get into this, like I'm thinking of, you know, Jesus' words, which we all know, John 16:33, in this world, you will have tribulation. Yes. What NIV is trouble.
Oh, yeah.
But take courage. I've overcome the world. So I think we need to say that you can be a godly Christian family and be close. It doesn't mean you won't have conflict.
Yes.
You're going to have conflict because we all are being transformed to become more and more like Jesus. And even as an older man, I'm still being transformed. So you get people who still have sin issues, which that you know, Jesus said, while you were yet sinners, Christ died for you. So, and you're bumping up against each other. And in the home is where life happens. So you're around each other hours at a time.
Yes.
And so there's going to be conflict. So conflict shouldn't freak you out. It's just what we do with the conflict, how we handle it, that's so important. And I think so many of us didn't see it handled properly.
Yes.
You know, either it was buried, we don't talk about it, or it was explosive.
Yeah.
And so this, I'm excited about this podcast because, you know, we're on the same journey everybody else is, but, you know, we figured some things out along the way through mistakes.
Yeah.
Doing it right, doing it wrong, you know, what works, what doesn't work. But I guess I just wanted to say, conflict is going to happen. And the church is a family. There will be conflict in the church. And healthy churches, healthy eldership, they figure out how to handle conflict in love with love and respect, you know?
And in conflict, none of us get it right 100% of the time.
No.
So the next step that you guys are talking about is when you're in conflict, you don't get it right, flesh rises up and you're too harsh or too mean or too intense or something. What to do then?
And first, you got to get it right in your marriage, right? I mean, we all have conflict in our marriage. We still do. But we're getting over it faster, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
And healing quicker. And
well, we no longer have four kids adding their pressure.
It helps. It helps. It does. We're not having to resolve it in front of four little kids. But when we did, we had to go let them know we're okay.
You could have what we had this morning where one of the ways I was being with our son is a way that she doesn't, that I can be with her that she also doesn't like. And so she actually just decided to jump on that bandwagon and be like, I'm having a hard time because you do that same thing to me. And then all of a sudden, I don't only have tension with my son. Now I have tension with my wife because she's like, you do that same thing to me. And I'm like,
I was more careful how I said that.
We can skip the niceties. That's what you meant. And that's what you said. So then all of a sudden I'm like, what? I'm having to deal with the side effects.
Yeah.
That it wasn't even an issue. Like, we didn't have any beef. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, are we?
Now you feel like a double failure.
That's exactly. I'm voice memoing on the way after I dropped Duke off at school on the way to the office. And I'm like, I know
what I need to go. I voice memoed you first
and said
I was sorry for saying anything actually, about that.
Speaking of other people's podcasts, sorry for the second reference, but we were being interviewed about on a podcast yesterday on marriage. And we were just talking about that one of the things that we found that's very helpful for us, and it might not be helpful for anyone else, but we actually sometimes will work out arguments over voice memo. Because it's a lot easier to listen to a person when you can't talk back. So as an example, when things get overwhelming, I need to go on a walk or maybe there's a moment of tension, you know, taking some time away first, like a break, recover, breathe. And then we'll often voice memo each other apologies and to hear each other's side, because even though she's like telling me, you know, she could be telling me her sides and how I made her feel, even if I disagree with her, at worst, I'm just yelling at a phone. Right?
I would wonder too if some of it is helpful to us because we're both really passionate people, and so our body language gets involved when we're upset, and so it removes you're not having to also like look at the person and.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm such a burden to look at.
Kind of.
I'm just saying, I think why it uniquely works for us.
Yeah. Well, Diane's very beautiful to look at, but sometimes when she's messed up and she's upset and she has her hearing thing on.
Oh, yeah.
And she's telling me exactly everything she wants to say.
You take it off and then yell at him.
I can't defend myself because she's got it off. I go, that is not fair.
That's not fair.
There was a book, wasn't there, called Fighting Fair or something?
Yeah, that's not fair. Nope.
But I love it.
But it's very effective.
The therapist that you told you, I've never had anybody in my office who said, you know, my parents really hurt me, but then they asked forgiveness. It's the people whose parents didn't.
Yeah.
I just think that's what we want me to talk about is we need to learn how to apologize and how to solve conflict. And, you know, as a father, there's a time for you to be firm, you know, because that's what kids need. You know, when they don't, when there's no line there and they don't know they want it, but if they push and there's no line and they can just get away with whatever, that's not true love.
Yeah.
True love includes, I think you said it once, that's firmness plus
kindness.
Kindness plus firmness. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, yesterday you had to do some kindness and firmness. And I my heart aches for the boys, especially who didn't have a father in the home or didn't have a father who could do that. Mm-hmm. You know, they may carry communication and conflict problems through their whole life. So it's a real gift.
Right.
I mean, whatever we're going to talk about, I think it's a real gift to your children when you learn how to do kindness and firmness. And because that's how God is with us. He's always kind, but he also loves us enough to reprove us when we need it. You know,
it's so interesting though, because if we're being real, even as a dad, it still feels having to be firm, even though you're trying to be kind, still doesn't feel good because you're, at least in our situation, our kids are giving us feedback of what that's making them feel. Or, you know, even if they don't give you feedback, you can see how visibly uncomfortable and unhappy they are with maybe some of those decisions that you're having to make. And it's hard because in that moment, you can't be like, and even when you try to say it, like, this is the most loving thing for me to do to hold this line with you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't compute in their situation.
Yeah. You know, when you did a study years ago on 1 Corinthians 13 and taught it, I think to a young couples class or something.
It was a young marriage class.
And what really struck me was love is kind, says in 1 Corinthians 13. And I think of kind as being kind of sweet and easy. But that word kind, correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, actually means doing something useful.
Yeah.
To another.
Yeah.
And then I was just reading in Proverbs 12:1, one who loves discipline, I don't know if any of us can say we actually love discipline, loves knowledge, but one who hates rebuke is stupid.
Yeah.
Exactly. Maybe try that one next.
Hey, and then, stupid.
And the wise son in the very next chapter, Proverbs 13:1, a wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer who does not listen to rebuke. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, Proverbs kind of is giving you that side, maybe permission as a father, that there is time for discipline and time for rebuke, and that is really a kind thing.
Well, we're fine.
Go ahead. I got another problem. You know, when you were saying, I thought of Proverbs 29:1, a man or woman who hardens their neck after much reproof will suddenly be broken, and there is no remedy. So after much reproof implies that there's reproof happening.
Yes.
And so I think that learning, you know, I had to learn to be reproved, you know, and I don't like to be criticized, and my flesh reacts and like, yeah, well, let me tell you a thing or two, you know, it's like, we've all got that nature in us.
Yeah.
But when we learn to accept reproof from the Lord and from others, it's a good thing, because if not, our heart will get hard and we'll become completely entitled. And then it says here, we'll be broken beyond remedy. It's another in the Hebrew here. And there is no remedy. In other words, like, you're really in trouble now. So I think that's what's a gift you give your kids when you give them loving reproof. And the problem is, like, today's text that you send out is so perfect.
Oh, yeah, we should read that.
You should read that in a second. Because you sent it out today is perfect for this podcast.
Okay, so that Proverbs, and then you need to hear from Brooke and Elizabeth about resolving conflict and stuff. But that Proverbs, I was a 16-year-old, fairly new Christian. My parents were just beginning to find their way back to church and to faith. And there was a big speaker that we went to hear about, basically for youth. And he read that. And I felt such strong conviction of the Holy Spirit, because I was in locked combat with my mom on a regular daily basis. Mm. And I realized, oh my gosh, I'm hardening my neck to my mom with almost a hatred. And that is going to break me. And it was like, whoa, I didn't know the Bible actually spoke into this kind of stuff. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What were you going to say, honey? You had one thing. I could share the verse really quick.
Yeah.
So we have this thing. Actually, some people might not know this, but this is a great time to just tell you that we have a daily text devotional that goes out. It's just usually a verse and one quick thought. And the idea is, like, on the daily, how can you just take a moment, even if that's 30 seconds, to reframe your mind around God's word and through a thought that would be helpful for you, for your family. So the link is in the show notes. You can just literally sign up. It's a text that will come to your phone every day. But this morning, and some of these we plan ahead, and some if you want to know what's going on in my life, just read the daily text. That's what you need to know. But James 1:20, human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. And then I just put a little note, pause. Have you been angry? For me personally, I can answer that yes. Ask for forgiveness and move in kindness and love. And so, I mean, obviously that's God speaking to my heart, but that's also me having to speak to my own heart of, like, gosh, you know, we know that the human anger never produces righteousness God desires. Sometimes we get really angry with our spouse, with our kids, especially, because, you know, and it's tricky because anger is a really motivating emotion, motivating for others, meaning it's a controlling, we can be very controlling with anger. It's very scary sometimes. So yeah, maybe we could share, we have a fun. So Birdie, our sweet Birdie, she is very sensitive to any sort of intensity that comes from me, which is really funny because she's not at all from Elizabeth. Like, she is, like, almost, you can say how you want, but
100% opposite.
Yeah. So that. She, like, it doesn't matter how intense Elizabeth is, it doesn't faze her. If I'm at all, even just, like, firm, she not only crumbles, but hates it and, like, it starts correcting me, which is really funny, helpful, you know, weird lines on that one.
Add to the layer, she doesn't read other people's emotions accurately.
Not at all.
There's lots of complexities there.
Yes.
So.
Well, so the other night, because often bedtime becomes this, just like many parents, but especially for Birdie, she has a hard time coming down. And so she was feeling all these different things. And I was having to say, hey, okay, this is the fifth time I've asked you to brush your teeth and you haven't done that yet. So I really need you to do that right now. Like, no more being distracted. No more coloring the one more thing. Right now, brush your teeth. No more options. I'm going to walk with you and stand with you until you brush your teeth. And she, like, just my presence bothers her at that moment because she's like, I want my freedom, you know? And so I'm waiting for her to brush her teeth. And then, you know, then we're getting ready to get in bed and I'm giving her a hug and I'm like, sweetie, I love you so much. And she's like, why are you being so firm? You're just being so mean to everybody. And I was like, well, honey, I'm not trying to be mean and I'm not trying to be rude to you, but like, you're not listening. And when you don't listen and I've asked you 5 times, I get frustrated. And so I'm being firm. She's like, I really think you need to work on it. I want to work on it. I also need you to know this isn't just because I want to be a punk to you. It's because you're also not listening. So we need to work on it together. Can we work on it together? She's like, you know, whatever. Like, okay, yeah, not really. Like, she does not in computing that she has any responsibility in this mess. And so that's the backdrop. Last night, maybe you should tell the dining room story, you know, the story of our dining room table and the saga.
You should tell your dining room table history.
It will lead up to what happened last night.
So okay. Newly married people that wish they could have a nice table and don't.
It's so funny. So we've been married for literally in a couple months, 18 years. We've been married for 18 years in just a few months.
We got our first real table last night on Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah. And not because we couldn't have or maybe couldn't afford one. I think we've always had... we've never had like not nice tables, but they've not been like, they've always been cool.
Yeah, we started with like the cheapest thing that IKEA had when we first got married, which was this tiny little table. It was actually cool.
Which when you make no money, you're first married, it was great.
Yeah, it was great. We lived in a little studio apartment first. I don't even think we had a table in that apartment. Nope. Anyway, we had this tiny little table. Then we went from that to, I can't remember what table. I think we had that for a long time. And then we moved to Los Angeles and didn't have a table. We had like an old metal desk that we put up against the wall and was the table.
But isn't that where you had to make the master bedroom? You draped off the dining room.
Yes.
Yeah, we lived in a one bedroom apartment in Los Angeles. So,
no table, no dining room.
For $9 million a month.
But then we got a 2-bedroom. And I remember. So Steve, our brother-in-law, who makes insanely gorgeous furniture. But he had never made furniture, and this was the first thing he'd made, and it was this janky table that was too tall for chairs and too short for stools. And all we had were stools, so we just kind of made the stools work, but you like couldn't fit your thigh fully underneath the table.
Always like cutting your leg during dinner. Like, ow, splinters. It was fun. It's a cool experience for people when they came over.
It was. It made for a good story. And then when we moved back to Portland, 3 kids at this point, we had that table for a little while. And then Brooke's dad had this extra piece of, it was like plywood that had like walnut veneer on top. Okay.
So not even real thing fully.
Yeah, but it looked nice. Cool. He just had the wood and we were broke. But we managed to scrape together money to buy like metal hairpin legs to put on it. So that was actually real pretty for a while, but it's like thin walnut veneer and a bunch of little
kids. Not going to hold up to kids.
We had it for 8 years actually now.
Yes.
Was it 8 years? Yeah.
But you can't refinish it because it's veneer. Yeah. And I had for a while now, and it's really rickety. So like if you bumped it, whoever's like doing a writing assignment.
Or water just goes flying after you bump it. You're like, oh.
Or like we do school at that table. So lots of tears over Sloan bumped it and it messed up my paper, my coloring, you know. But I had been saying, I really, really want a new table, but I don't want a new table because I don't want to have to. I know how I
You don't want a brand new table, meaning like she didn't want something brand new that we. And it makes sense. We're at the stage of life where we're still putting miles on stuff. You know, we're putting miles on anything.
Well, and I just know who I would be if we had some really nice.
And
table.
I appreciate your self-awareness because that would be hard for everybody.
But we're homeschooling with one of Bertie's friends. And I'm like, man, the janky table, this is getting a little hard. So I've been looking on Facebook Marketplace and not really finding anything. I've been looking for months. And then this one popped up that is like the table I would buy when I'm ready for a nice one. And it came up used. Anyway, we got a real table last night.
Yay.
But Brooke and Duke were bringing it in from the car.
We went to go pick it up. Yeah.
And the girls were already feeling all sorts of things about getting a new table. They were
happy. Which we didn't expect at all. Like the little ones.
Oh
they're
my
like,
goodness.
Like, they were like borderline in tears, the younger two. But we don't want a new table. We like our old table.
And we're like, what are you talking about? Like I couldn't connect.
And then I pointed, I said, I think it's because you have a lot of memory. That table has a lot of history for our family, but we'll make new memories at this new table.
Well, and then I said, Bertie, you know, if do you not like new things? Like, what if we move and move from this house? And she goes, oh, that's fine. I hate this house. And I was like,
she goes, I want a brand new house.
I was like, she's like, I want one of those, like one of my friends, Grace. I was like, okay, sweetheart, that's not happening right now. So that was fun. So, so yeah. It's obviously she's not attached to just the things. It's that table. There's something with
she's
that table.
She wants a nice house. Yeah.
She wants a brand new house. That's what she said. That was her words. Yeah, we raise high class kids. Uh-huh. So,
but the boys are bringing in the table and it's like tricky to get it through the door, and Duke's like, they're almost to where it needs to go. And Duke's hand is hurting and there's
he had surgery recently on his finger. And so he doesn't have full strength in this one hand. And then I'm walking in and we have like a light that hangs over the table and I'm trying to walk back and not scrape anything. And I'm hitting my head on the light. So I'm like, and Duke's like, he's like, I'm going to drop it. And I'm like, stop, dude. You don't drop it. Like, don't drop the table. And I'm hitting my head. So this is a tense moment. Nothing crazy. Anytime that you move furniture, you know, people have this situation.
Right.
But then Birdie, yes. Who's sitting at the stool at the counter because she didn't want to eat dinner on the new table.
Refused.
She's sitting at the stool and as all of this chaos is going on and you just hear her start yelling.
You're at me.
Work on it. Work on it. Dad, you said you were going to work on not being too firm.
So the whole time I'm moving this table,
is real life.
I have an 8.5-year-old daughter who's just like reminding
me, on it.
Just do not become too firm.
So this is a practical example of the reality that God is using you as a father and a mother to shape your kids. And he's using your kids to shape you.
Amen.
Yeah. And that's how it happens. Oh. In those moments that are unplanned. What does John Mark say? My best and worst parenting moments were not planned or something like that.
Yep. Yeah.
This is life. And that's why, you know, ideally we're walking in the spirit and we have less mess ups and more successes. But
yeah. But that's why
we're not that great.
That, are we?
Without the Lord, no, the Lord can help us so much.
What were you saying? As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to legacy builders in a large dollar amount. But we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify, and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
But I think why we even wanted to do this episode is, you know, the reality, and I think this is just not talked about enough, and you're going to hear us talk about it all the time, because there are no perfect parents. You hear us say all the time, there's no perfect kids. There are no perfect parents. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have lots of small moments of not handling stuff great, and you're going to have big moments where you handle stuff terribly. And I think the enemy so often, especially when we talk about this, it seems like one of the number one responses from parents is they feel so much shame around how they're being that it makes it near impossible for them to make it right or apologize because they feel like so much shame around the fact that they shouldn't have responded that way. Or maybe fear that if they humble themselves and apologize, their kid will think that it's not their kid's fault at all. Yeah. It's just the parent's fault.
Yeah.
I think those are just straight up lies from the enemy.
Yeah.
I think I was laughing in that moment. I mean, Birdie's hilarious in general with just some of that and not reading the moment. But I was laughing and grateful that for all the mistakes we're making, and I feel like right now we're having to apologize left and right.
We're not in
making mistakes left and right. Yeah, I would not say that we are doing a stellar job right now.
We're hanging on.
But the fact that there's a culture being created where there's space. She wasn't saying it to him to correct him. She was saying hey, and I just love her being the one that was saying this because it's so black and white. There's nothing behind it. She's just, we Maybe. Talked about this. You said you were going to work on it. Like, come on.
And she was noticing a moment where I wasn't executing the way that she would have hoped.
Yeah. Right. So I am just grateful that there's at least something being normalized, that we are all working on this together. Yeah. This is not, we parent you all day long, correct you all day long, and tell you how to do things right. And we never get it wrong. Mm. No, it's we get it wrong all the time. And I want them to remember that not just that we got it wrong, but that we went back and attempted to make it right. And I think that's why we wanted to have this conversation, because you will have those times. You will have conflict. Absolutely. You will have ruptures where you don't handle it right. Mm-hmm. It's not just the kids are not going to handle it right. So often it's like the kid does one thing that pokes at your childhood wound or something you're dealing with. Or right now it feels like so many of my not great moments are simply because there's so many that need something. Yeah. Or there's so many at one time who are not handling something great. And I respond terribly. I had to do that this morning. I was just irritable with Scarlett, who needed her hair done for a theater thing. And I wasn't actually irritated at her, but I sure communicated that I was. Yeah. I was irritated at the other two who were giving me a really hard time about doing school.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get out of the house to come record this podcast.
Or have you ever had one of those moments where you're not upset with the kids at all, but you're upset with your spouse and you take it out on your kids?
Yes.
I mean, that's the worst, because it's so not fair.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think the most important things we can say to our kids is, I'm sorry and it's not your fault.
Yes.
Even if they're the ones that did the thing that started the snowball.
Yes.
It's not their fault how we respond.
Yes.
No.
And I think there's just so much power in if we can just say those words, I'm sorry, it's not your fault. Yeah. It's huge. And that the language of rupture and repair is, for those of you like true purists, it comes from psychologists and attachment theory. And it's used less in the context of when we blow it and are rude and mean to our kids or to somebody else, more in the context of when our kids need something, whether it's they just need us to make eye contact with them when they're little, or they need us to notice that they're feeling anxious. That's a huge one. Half the time, our kids present as if they're angry or pushing back, but underneath it, they're actually anxious about something. That's so easy to miss. When we miss what's really happening with our spouse, with our kids, and we're wrapped up in our own life, which is going to happen all the time. That's the rupture, and the repair is when we go back and attune to them, look them in the eye and say, I want to hear about your day. I'm sorry I was distracted. I really do want to know. Or, you know, a child has been crying and you're just need to get something done and you're ignoring the fact that they're feeling something. When you go back and say, scoop them up and say, I love you. Tell me what's going on. You know, that's the repair. But I think it fits so well, the same language, rupture and repair, fits so well, if anything, better in those moments of conflict, in the moments where we don't handle things how we would want to. I think that if that's language that we can bring into our family culture, ruptures are normal. They're going to happen. They're going to happen a lot. But repair is so important, and we've got to repair every time. And sometimes we have the time for a long repair that leads to totally restored connection, and we've worked it out completely. And sometimes there isn't the time for that. And you need to just be able to say, I'm sorry. It's not your fault. I was so irritable. Will you please forgive me?
Sometimes it is their fault that, meaning like the reason. Yeah. Well, I'll share a story in a minute.
Well, but sometimes they start the snowball, which is what I said earlier.
I just want you. So what we're saying here is, you know, I'm thinking point one, point two, point three. Number one, conflict is normal. Number two, deal with it.
Yeah.
Number three, deal with it properly with God's help. And so that's kind of what we're talking about right now. And so you guys do deal with it. But I think it needs to be said, sometimes we can't deal with it in the moment because we're too angry or too upset. We're not ready. Even in your marriage, there is a time when one of you can say, I just need a little space. But what we were trained by one of our mentors, Bill and Laurie Kies, is that if in your marriage, if you're the one that says, I need some space, you need to be the one to come back and say, okay, I'm ready to talk. Because what's the other person's back there? Like, well, I want to resolve this, but you're saying we can't right now.
Yeah.
And
those are
you?
The little foxes that spoil the vineyard. Over time, those things build up into a sort of bitterness and resentment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She just quoted Song of Solomon, the little foxes that spoil the vineyard. Sometimes it's not a massive failure in marriage that blows up a marriage. It's a lot of little things that don't get resolved. But I just wanted to say sometimes you can't, like you just said, you maybe you can't resolve it in that moment for whatever reason, but at some point you can, and you guys are doing that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes after emotions have gone down, you know, and I think that's one of the signs of a godly person. Like I remember all my years serving with Luis Palau, who's a fiery Latin man. You know, he had what it takes to travel the world. I think he and his wife figured out over the course of their marriage, they were apart like 13 years or something because he was preaching the gospel and millions of people are getting saved, but he's in conflict and spiritual warfare. And I'm working side by side with him. I'm in Chicago and it's demons flying everywhere. And I would see him like maybe lose his temper. But what I noticed about him is the next day, almost every time he would say, you know, yesterday was difficult, but this morning I was with the Lord and the Lord reminded me. And he was always, he would humble himself and realize he'd confess his sin. Mm. And that's leadership.
Yeah.
Like I'd say, I respect that man.
Yeah.
Because I see the battle he's in, but I also see he has a genuine walk with God. He got up early in the morning and God would speak to him. And I know, like, you had a conversation this morning, and you know, you were a good father in a situation, and it was the next morning that you did an amazing job of fathering one of your children. And I see you guys doing this all the time, you know, and there's no perfect father, like you said, except our Father who is in heaven. He's the only one.
Yeah.
But I think we can father like him and we can parent the way he parents us, but we're just not going to do it perfectly.
Yeah.
But don't be discouraged if, you know, man, I should have handled that last night, but I didn't. Yeah. But handle it.
Yeah.
It's still okay to come back and say last night or 3 days ago, you know, like, I mean, today I got on the phone and left a message for an Allstate insurance agent that I kind of was rude with on the phone yesterday because they, you know, I'm solving a little car problem. My bumper's broken and they wanted
Someone broke your bumper?
Yeah, who was it? I was sitting in the circle whose name I won't mention. His name is next to me. But anyway.
And it wasn't us.
So I got an estimate. It's going to be like almost $4,000. And their first offer was $600. And I said, are you kidding me? Yeah. And then Diane was sitting next to me. She goes, you know, you really shouldn't speak like that. And I go, I know. And then I talked to another Allstate person. And
I was just thinking, this poor girl was like lower level, entry level. Yeah. I'm thinking, oh, she went home right after that.
Yeah. And I thought, that's terrible. And, you know, I'll never meet her. I'll never see who she is. But she's a real life person that's working for probably not much money.
You're right.
And today I got another conversation with somebody else. And, you know, I had to say, hey, this is not good. You know, like, because I'm in my mind, I'm thinking, you guys better do this right, or I'm finding a new insurance company, right?
Sure.
So, but that one, she goes, well, you handled that one well. So we got here early this morning and I'm sitting out there and we started talking about this. I thought, you know what? I need to call that girl back and apologize. So I still had her number. I didn't get her. I got her message machine, but I said, hey, I'm the one that left a rude message for you right before you went home.
That's
and
great.
I shouldn't have done that. You probably get a lot of that. And so I just want to ask your forgiveness, you know? So I said, you don't need to call me back. I'm not lifting myself up as a great example. I'm saying I blew it.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't immediately call her back.
This
morning.
Even repairing with the Allstate.
Diane reminded me of my sin.
You know, I think
which a good spouse will do.
But wait. Yeah. I think there's something really beautiful, like, because there's rupture and repair in family. But I also think I see this tendency with people. It's really interesting. Different people have different value systems, or maybe just different awareness, or maybe you were modeled different stuff. But you're like one way, even I'm saying this, especially with Jesus followers, they're one way with the people that they know or that might know them or family or even friends or church people they go with. But then when it comes to a situation like you're in an environment where it's like a restaurant or like that or situation on the phone, a business situation, they just become versions of themselves. They're like, that doesn't translate, right?
Yeah.
Now, we all have those parts. I just think it's really what you did, I think, is a beautiful example. Yeah. And almost nobody in that space does that. And I think that I had to call the dentist the other day for Elizabeth. And this lady who she was the front desk gal. She was just making all the reservations. And she was so great. Like the whole time she's just talking us through. And the whole time I'm just talking to her, like, this lady is so awesome. And so she was on speaker. Phone because I was walking around the house doing stuff and Elizabeth was hearing it. And I just said, I forgot her name. And so I asked her, that's her name. Mm-hmm. She goes, I said, what's your name again? She goes, Karen. I know it's unfortunate. I know she's this older lady. Cause all the Karens going around, you know, the idea of a Karen, But she's like, I know it's unfortunate, but my name's Karen. I was like, Karen, I don't know, like, I'm sold on this dentist office because of you. Like, I'm so excited to meet you. And thank you for just being so rad at your job. And I really meant it because she was so polite. Yeah. And I find in those moments, just like you, like if you just even take one extra, just gentle step, how much it changes people in that space because they know, they never hear it. And I'm not, again, that's not a pat on the back as much as it's like a, I think a life hack. People try to get, use anger to motivate people to help them.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Use kindness, like use kindness and watch how motivating that is.
I think you should have told our presidential candidates this a couple months ago.
Kindness goes a long way.
Think of the repair they need to be doing.
Oh, we could do some repair here. So yeah, but I mean, so anyway, but interestingly enough on the repair thing, this morning we were, anyway, we had some interactions with some kids last night and we had to, I had specifically, we had a moment where I just needed to be a dad and I mean, you just, I have to be the wall right now with the kids that are older. And I don't like being the wall in that sense because no matter, like that's just a bad spot to be, it feels like. It feels like no matter what, there's this line that you have to hold that is against what they might know to be good and their will, and it's strong now. They're not little kids anymore. So like, they have very thought through ways of how they feel about stuff. And so having to be the wall and walk through certain parts with them are really hard. Anyway, we had some interactions and this morning, I mean, and obviously like, it's okay. It was Duke with him and I just were in the middle of working out some stuff, which is normal in our relationship. But this morning we're driving to school and we had to work some stuff out. But I was just thinking, he was telling me about a story of some friends and just some different dynamics and some challenges that one of his friends was talking to him about their family dynamic. And I just said, well, I'm so sorry to hear that. Please let me know if I can help you with, you know, processing any of that. But I said, I know we've had a lot of tension. And I said, one of the differences with our family, and it's not a big one, but it's that we repair stuff. So I'm just going to take a minute. We both had to apologize. But then I just said, I had to say some hard stuff to you, but here's also who I see you to be. Like these things that I said were true, meaning the things I'm seeing. At the very same time, I think you're incredible. And I really think you're an amazing man of God and you're trustworthy. And this is who I see you to be. And even though you've had moments where you haven't made the right decision, just like we all do, that doesn't make you a bad person. It just means you're growing up just like all of us. So trying to repair and restore what I really see him to be. And I found like even that moment, it was so restorative because it went from like tense and moody and heavy when we got in the car to by the time, you know, we were to school, my hand was on his shoulder and I was just praying blessing over his day, which we always do. And he still, I told you this, I don't know if you guys know this. He still, cause he drives to school. Okay, he has his permit. So I have to drive in the passenger seat. So we always have to get out and switch. But even to this day, he will so far, it will go away soon. Yeah. He gets out of the car and we switch. And when we switch, he always gives me a hug before he goes, even with all his friends around. I was like, this is a good win. So even with all of that going on, there was still that moment. There was still that consistency. Yeah. And I guess to say like, it was messy, but I think you're, especially your teenage kids, at least what I'm experiencing in real time right now, is they need that repair. And I know even for our kids that are older, they need to know what we love about them, that we still see that in them, that we still prefer them, that we still enjoy them. Because you do, although I don't think you always do as much maybe as naturally in these seasons. It's a lot. I think in certain seasons, it is more challenging. And it's like, whew, this is a hard one. I'm having a hard time trying to find these extra things that are just naturally I'm drawn to. But
well, he was even articulating to me this morning of feeling like most of our... And he was very articulate, but basically that most of our interactions right now, he's either being corrected or told something to do.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, I can see how you would feel that way. Yeah. And there's obvious reasons for that.
it's not just because we're trying to make his life
hard. And we had a long conversation about it, but it was a good window for me to recognize, oh, you're feeling this too. This isn't just we're feeling that as your parents. Like, oh, we just would like some like nice connection with you. But he's feeling it too. And so I love, Brooke, that you took that time to encourage him and call out what you see.
Me too.
Because it's so important. And especially as they get busier and their lives are full and their social lives take off, there's less and less time for that. Mm-hmm. Whereas when they're little and you see them do something cute, you're doing that all day long. Yeah. Like, I love the picture you just drew me for the 80th time.
But I don't think repair is just... And Diana, I want you to go next. I don't think repair is just, apologizing. It is, but I think there is a repairing element.
Because so, what it actually is restored connection.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that, so that's the point, is that when we talk about rupture and repair, it is apologizing. It is taking ownership, but it's not just that. Yes. I think it is taking the next step. And as a parent, your kids don't have any of those tools. So you really have to go first. And you know, a lot of the times, at least in our experience, they don't even know how to necessarily give back. It wasn't like in that moment, he's like, and dad, you are a stellar father, just reflecting the excellence of Jesus and all you do. Like none of that. Like it thanks, was just like, dad. Thanks. You know, like, cool. I was like, he'll appreciate this later. Anyway, I think that's a note.
But yeah, Diane, you have a couple of things. The idea of rupture and repair is, like you said, a psychological term, and it's so valuable and so good, but you know, we're kind of Bible first.
Yes, we are.
And I was just thinking as you were talking, this is so biblical of an idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the way from, and you, Phil, you're going to have to tell me where, but I think it's in 1 Corinthians, that if things are not right between you and another person, the Bible talks about leaving your sacrifice or leaving your contribution, even your giving at the altar. Before you even reconnect with God, you need to go back and make that right with that person. That is so valuable that he says, just leave the altar and go make things right. Phil's looking it up right now. But at the same time, today's proverb, today is the 15th, which I never remember dates, but it's Rebecca's birthday, so... You know,
that's right.
Happy birthday, Rebecca.
This isn't airing on her birthday, but we're recording it on her birthday.
So on the 15th in Proverbs 15, if you read a Proverbs every day, which Phil does, and I every once in a while do, but Proverbs 15:1 was also one of the first ones I memorized as a mouthy teenager. A gentle answer turns away wrath.
But and a that's harsh what word you do. Stirs up anger.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so this morning... there was still tension between you. Little wrath would have been very easy to ignite right then. But instead, you gave a soft answer on your way to school, and it turned it. It just turned it away. Turned away the wrath.
That's a good point.
And if you do nothing, if you think when you do nothing, you're just moving on. But rarely is the person with big feelings moving on with you. So to do something, to give a soft answer... as just a way, let's get this wrath away. We're not going to just hope it goes away. We're going to purposely say the words that need to be said to take the anger away and to restore us back to what is Ephesians 5, I think it's verse 1, says the law of love. There's a law of love. And we as Christian parents, above all else, with all of our failures and all of our immaturity, we can follow the way of love, even if it's delayed a little bit.
Yeah.
And if it's more part of the repair, because we are going to rupture relationships. Just, I wish it wasn't true, but there's still too much of the old Diane in me. And so it is inevitable.
Yeah, that Proverbs 15:1, I read it again today. It's convicting every time.
Yeah.
Because... for me anyway.
Because the
gentle answer turns away wrath.
Yes.
But another thing, but a harsh word, that word harsh in Hebrew is also painful.
Oh, did I?
No, you quoted it right.
Okay.
In the NASB margin, it says painful. That's when the translator said we could have translated that harsh or painful. So they'll put, it was so close, they'll put the other word in the margin. Yeah. So that's the whole thing. Harsh words hurt. They're painful. You know, the old kids thing, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. That's a lie.
Yeah.
Of course.
So it's very hurtful. You know, it's what you quote often too, death and life is in the power of the tongue. And then speaking harsh words is like the thrust of a sword. You getting stabbed hurts. So that's why that's why we need to come back and say, you know, and I have to do this with Diane. I'm sorry. I was harsh with you. I'm sorry. I was, you know, said what I said, but
like when I scraped the bumper right off of our car.
Oh, that's no big deal. I'm the one that has caused more back into people. We had a single mom over to our church on Sunday afternoon because we felt so much compassion for her. She said, "Follow us home," and it was rushed because we had an evening service. I'll go out and get the food now, so I get in my car to back up to go get the food and slam right into her car. Come over to our house and I'll smash your car. You already can't feed your family. So I think we gave her some money for her smash car, but it's like, I'm the it's no big deal that you, it's no big deal that you broke the bumper. But anyway,
we're just mentioning the
All State's going to come through, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, the verse that you referred to is actually Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, not Corinthians. He said, if you're presenting your offering at the altar and you remember there, remember your brother has something against you. Leave your offering there before the altar. Go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. I think that's Matthew 5:23-24. And I think that's God saying, it's really important to me how you treat each other.
That's right. Yeah.
That don't come and give your offering and worship me in church when you just blasted your spouse on the way to church. Hey, I'd rather have you go outside, ask your spouse's forgiveness, and then come in here and raise your hands and worship.
Yeah. That's and repair.
That's
right?
The, yeah, I mean, it's just right here. And then also in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, when you think about we don't like to be spoken harshly to. It hurts us. Then, you know, so when we're talking about her, Jesus said, you know, the golden rule, right? It's used to be in your school classrooms. Yes. It used to be on the wall.
Yeah.
Now they don't want it
Hard
there.
Hard to imagine.
Whatever you want others to do for you, do so for them. For this is the law and the prophets. This fulfills God's heart. Mm. So I can say however you want others to speak to you, speak to them that way, for this honors God. So that's why I didn't speak that way to this, you know, Allstate employee yesterday. And she's made in the image of God. She's loved by God. She's important to God. Mm-hmm. And as a follower of Jesus, I should speak to her the way Jesus would speak to her.
Yes.
And I don't think that means you don't deal with conflict. It doesn't mean you aren't even firm. Mm. But God's firm with us. And I had one other verse I was flipping through when you were talking, and I know Diane was looking over at me, stop flipping through your Bible. But I was trying to find this.
She was communicating with you.
She was saying, you're becoming a distraction. But I was trying to find this one verse because I couldn't remember where it was in Jeremiah.
Now, and, Phil, just to be clear, did I actually say that?
No, you just looked over at me like, what are you doing?
Isn't it amazing? Let's talk about result repair right now.
Did you not look over and be like, what are you doing?
This is a repair live edition.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, I found it. This is why using the same Bible your whole life, I knew it was on the left-hand page at the bottom.
Yeah.
And so it's in Jeremiah 46, and I just think it fits here. It's God is speaking. He said, I shall not make a full, it's talk, I won't read the whole passage. I won't make a full end of you. In other words, I'm not going to kill you. But I shall correct you properly. Mm. And I wrote in my Bible, God's discipline is perfect.
Mm.
And he's never too harsh, and he's too gentle. He's always the perfect example of gentleness. What is it? And firmness?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he corrects us properly. And I think that we want to do that with our kids, but we're not going to do it perfect every time like God does. But God, because he whom the Lord loves, he disciplines. That's trains. He trains us for more usability, for more blessing in our own life, and so that we can be a bigger blessing to others. And I said that we have to teach this to our kids.
Yeah.
And I am so proud of the two of you because you are, you see all your faults and more. I see you knocking it out of the park. Like you are knocking it out of the park. And we see it in your kids. We see it in you. But it's hard. It's hard work. Being a parent is hard work. Being a mother,
we don't feel it,
I think being
you.
A mother is the hardest job on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. I also think it's the most important job on planet Earth. And I think fathering children is maybe the second hardest job on planet Earth and probably the second most important, maybe the most important.
Yeah.
You know, the role of the father is, they're equal. You can't rank them, but you know, you're not going to hear that on your, CNN or whatever.
Yeah.
It's totally true. And you guys are doing a great job, and it's a journey, and you're going to stumble along the way. Mm-hmm. You're going to trip over some rocks. You're going to fall on your face, but the righteous man falls seven times and rises again. You know,
I know. I love that. That's a helpful
Emerson
verse.
Eggerichs loved to quote that to me, but it's true. It's true.
It's so true. I think also just to maybe wrap up today is to say the importance is the repair piece, because the truth is we're repairing because we know it's the right thing to do. We have a conviction that's the right thing to do. It still doesn't erase pain. So I think it's important to say that you still have to work through, when ruptures happen, it still hurts. And so I think we have to remember that even right now, thank you for saying it. Those are very kind words, but it's hard to receive what you're saying because we have to sit in it. So maybe just to say, I think to anybody that's listening that maybe feels like we do, you can be doing all the right things and it still feel hard and it still feel like Ugh, I still don't feel like I'm knocking it out of the park. Mm-hmm. I still don't feel, and I actually think some of that is good.
You
I think
are.
It's, yeah, I it's good too, yeah. to not be like, I am slaying this parent thing. I think that's actually probably a very helpful posture to be in, because if I thought I was doing it all great, I'd be very closed off to changing, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the fact that that it doesn't feel, sincerely, it doesn't feel like we're knocking it out of the park is helpful.
Can I add a little tag on that
Please.
Just kept coming to my mind? Elizabeth, you said to say to your kids, it's not your fault. It's mm-hmm. so powerful. And I think that's 100% true. But in our heads, it's very easy to think it is their fault. Mm-hmm. He got in my face. He's being rude. She's going through a period of time that is just almost impossible and disrespectful. So
or
we think
her
it is
actual period. Yes. You know, that too. Yes.
That too. And you have a household of girls.
Yes, I do.
It's coming.
And there's things. Yes.
But I think we need to remember the phrase that somebody taught us. Your response is my response is my responsibility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's never anybody else's fault when I lash out in anger or, you know, gossip or criticize or it's always my response to somebody else's maybe sin or offensive behavior is my responsibility.
Yeah.
So therefore, we can honestly say, even if our kids are just really being difficult and you know, kind of pushing all your buttons and everything's coming up to the surface, it is not their fault when we're angry at them. And I think it's really important that we remember that punishment, the biblical definition of punishment is you give somebody what they deserve.
Yeah.
But the biblical definition of discipline is training.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually training. You're not giving your kids what they deserve.
Yeah, you're training
them
a different way.
That is not godly discipline.
Yeah.
Godly discipline is, okay, I'm going to train you in a better way.
Mm-hmm.
That this is not the way we treat people or we talk to people. I'm going to train you. And so it really is, sometimes as a parent, you think that you're giving your kids what they deserve. And when you are doing that, you're making a mistake.
Yes.
That is an unrighteous attitude. And we all fall into it.
And it sows in pain. It sows in a lot of pain.
Yeah, but when you told Bertie, but you also, I asked you 5 times to brush your teeth, so let's work on it together.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's saying that's God's training me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to also train you.
I think she only thinks that God's training me.
Over time, she's going to learn.
It might be a longer time.
Lots of training.
Well, take it from our advice. Are you going to say something?
Sure.
One more thing, and then we'll close. This is the last thing.
Last thing. Well, I think it's also incredibly important in this conversation to also ask God for unique insights into your kids and to know your kids. So one child might be not brushing their teeth and need to be reminded 5 times because they don't want to go to bed and they are disobeying you.
Yes.
In this instance, he's talking about with Birdie and her teeth. She has OCD among lots of other things. And there was a picture that had a little white spot that she hadn't colored in. And so part of the delay in brushing her teeth was she couldn't get herself to brush her teeth until she'd gone and fixed the picture. Mm-hmm.
And she told us that. She said, my mind, I can't, it just drives, it has to be done. I have to do it. You know, she
what
feels that burden.
Well, and there's a lot of layers there and there's parenting children with OCD is very counterintuitive. If you let them do all the things their OCD is telling them, you're actually feeding their OCD. That's a whole episode for another time. But I think it's so important that we know our kids because in that moment, in frustration, using the teeth brushing for an example, you could get angry and we miss this all the time. So please don't. This is not me saying, we got it right. Do as we do.
Yeah.
But it would be so easy to miss the thing underneath the thing and just give them a consequence and be angry when really the thing might not be the thing.
Mm.
And sometimes the thing is the thing. But in this instance, there were deeper layers there. Nighttime is really hard for her brain in general. But there was a picture that needed the little spot colored in.
Yeah.
So I think we constantly need to be asking God for wisdom and discernment to understand our kids, to understand where the pushback, especially our teenagers, to understand there's always something underneath the disrespectful pushback behavior.
Yeah.
And when I feel like I'm having to catch myself to slow down even more the older they get. I thought you had to slow down a lot when they were young, but the older they get, you have to slow down even more to be able to peel back the layers of what is underneath and how they need to be seen to really be able to restore that connection.
Yeah.
That's really important.
I'm feeling like this episode should end with a short prayer.
Yes.
Would it be okay?
Phil, why don't you pray?
If I just pray,
yes.
I just,
you should.
What
That's
she
a
just
great
said
idea.
Is so true.
It
is
yes.
So we true. Can't do this without help from God with wisdom. So Father, thank you for the privilege of thinking about children and raising them in the ways of the Lord. Thank you that every child that's been given to the parents listening to this podcast are gifts from you to them. Mm-hmm. And Lord, how could we ever expect to raise them in our own strength? And so Lord, I ask for this wisdom that you said, if we ask for it, you will give it. And I pray that you'd cause every parent to continually come to you saying, Lord, I love my child and you love them more even than I do. And I need your wisdom on how to raise them to be a lover of God and a follower of Jesus and productive in society. So give us all wisdom as we follow the way of the Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.